ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Only, how's it? Okay, only text 31. Okay. Well, no, I'm in the wrong chapter, and that explains it.
Chapter 6.
Yes, chapter 6. Okay. Hare Krishna. Okay, I read the two previous verses without purpose first, and then we go to the. So with text 29, let's see if I can see it. Te vairochanim asinam guptam cha surayatapai. Sriya paramaya yustam jita se sam upagamam. The demigods approached Pali Maharaj, the son of Virochana, and sat down near him. Pali Maharaj was protected by the commanders of the demons and was most opulent, having conquered all the universes. Text 30. Mahendra Slakshnaya Vacha Santayitva Mahamati Abhyabhasatat Sarvam Sikshitam Purushottamat. After pleasing Bali Maharaj with mild words, Lord Indra, the king of the demigods, who was most intelligent, very politely submitted all the proposals he had learned from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. And then we have here text 31 of today, the old today's verse. Tatvaro chatadaityasya tatranyehe suraripa Sambaro ristanemischa ye chatripura vasinaha tat. All those words to but arochata were very pleasing. Daityasya to Bali Maharaj. Tatra, as well as anye, others, ye, who were asura aripa, the chiefs of the asuras, sambara, aristanemi. Cha, also, ye, others, who, okay, others who, okay. Cha, and Tripuravasina, all the residents of Tripura. Translation. The proposals submitted by King Indra were immediately accepted by Bali Maharaj and his assistants, headed by Sambara and Aristanemi, and by all by all the other residents of Tripura. Kindly repeat, the proposal submitted by King Indra were immediately accepted by Bali Maharaj and his assistants, headed by Sambhara and Aristanemi, and by all the others residents of Tripura. Purport. It appears from this verse that politics, diplomacy, the propensity to cheat, and everything that we find in this world in individual and social negotiations between two parties are also present in the upper planetary systems. The demigods went to Bali Maharaj with a proposal to manufacture nectar, and the daityas, the demons, immediately accepted it, thinking that since the demigods were already weak, when the nectar was produced, the demons would take it from them and use it for their own purposes. The demigods, of course, had similar intentions. The only difference is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, was on the side of the demigods because the demigods were his devotees, whereas the demons did not care about Lord Vishnu. All over the universe, there are two parties, the Vishnu party or God-conscious party and the godless party. The godless party is never happy. The godless party is never happy or victorious, but the God-conscious party is always happy and victorious. Hare Bol. Good news. Om Aganati Miranda Shagana Ganasa Kya Shakyuramurutam Tasmay Singhurve Maham. Nama Om Vishnu Praya Krishna Prasnaya Vitalaya Sri Mate Bhaktivedanta Samtanamne. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Guru Vami Pracharya Niyamisesa Sunyavari Paskacharya Satari. Those three verses. Te Vairochanim Asinam Guptam Chasraja Yutapai Sriya Paramaya Justam Gita Sesam Upagamam Mahendra Slakshnaya Vacha Shantya Itva Mahamati Abhyabhasa Tatat Sarvam Sikshitam Purusottamat Tatvarocha Tadaityasya Tatranye Ye Suradipa Sambaro Istane Misha Ye Shantipura Avasinaha. Those are the three verses in English. The demigods approached Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochana, and sat down near him. Bali Maharaj was protected by the commanders of the demons and was most opulent, having conquered all the universes. After pleasing Bali Maharaj with mild words, Lord Indra, the king of the demigods, who was most intelligent, were very, very politely submitted all the proposals he had learned from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. The proposals submitted by King Indra were immediately accepted by Bali Maharaj and his assistants, headed by Sambhara and Aristanemi, and by all the other residents of Tripura. So first we get a nice picture of, we can say in one sense, the etiquette. Here we are dealing with the demons, still they have some etiquette. So in one sense the demons of those times, of that category, is quite qualified compared to what we have in modern time. So there, because it's mentioned It's mentioned previously that the demigods was approaching and there was a little bit concern what is going on, but Bali Maharaj said, cool it down and let them come. And here Bali Maharaj is nicely seated, the demigods comes and sits down non-aggressively nearby. But Bali Maharaj still he has his bodyguards around him, just in case. I mean, if you're a king, if you rule like that, what do you know what is going to come? I mean, someone puts on a good facade to come close to you, and then well, does something else. So there is this powerful man, well, kind of checking that everything continues to be peaceful. And then Bali Maharaj, the Prabhupada says here, well, the God conscious party will always be victorious. Because Bali Maharaj here is interesting how he could become so, in one sense it looked like he is the one who is victorious, and in one sense it is. But there is being these demons of the old times when they knew that you had to have a guru. And Krishna says that also, Tadviri Pranipatina in the Bhagavad Gita. And that is after describing the different sacrifices. So if you're going to make a sacrifice, you need a guru, you need a priest who makes a sacrifice for you. And so they have their guru, their priest, Sukracharya, who will hear more about in connection with Vamandev. Because then at that time Sukracharya has, that is again Bali Maharaj, he's making sacrifice, okay, for the sake of becoming powerful, or if that was to become powerful. And Sukracharya correctly says you should make a sacrifice to please Lord Vishnu, then you will be powerful. So Bali Maharaj, being actually one sense more intelligent than his guru, well, he took the words of his guru and they made the sacrifices, and the Lord, well, and he gained power even though he were a demon. When Vamandev comes and want to ask for not everything, he just asks for 3 steps of land. Very smart. You start with something small. So then Sukracharya becomes very concerned because he understands that, oh, this is Lord Vishnu coming. But then Bali Maharaj says, oh, how nice. Yes, what can I do for you? But Bali Maharaj says, no, don't promise me anything. He will take everything away. And of course then Sukracharya could think, well, if everything is taken away from you, then how are you going to give in charity to your guru, to your teacher? So there's a concern. But then Bali Maharaj says, but you have said that I should worship Lord Vishnu, please Lord Vishnu, then everything will be good, prosper. So if now this is Lord Vishnu and he wants to take everything, what's the problem? Well, it was not a problem for Bali Maharaj, because Bali Maharaj was a good demon. The good demon, not the bad one. Not a bad devotee, a good demon. Of course, you know, then Vamadev, he manifests his true nature. He's not just a dwarf boy or something. Well, he's that, but not just that. But in that is hidden. He has all the potency of the Supreme Lord. He is the Supreme Lord, taking that form. And thus takes his 3 steps and expands his steps and takes the whole universe away from Bali Maharaj. Okay, that's... and then finally there's only one step, the third step, yes, to k- keep his word. That's interesting also. Lord Vishnu, as Vamadev said, well, okay, you've given two steps, but I still have one step to put. Where should I put it? You promised me 3 steps of land. I only got 2. What are you going to do? I arrest you. So Vamadev, they arrest Bali Maharaj and embarrass him like anything. So the Lord puts his, we can say, one of his devotees in a demon, in the demon family, a devotee, because he had a devotional attitude. Give everything to Lord Vishnu. And then he's even tied up and he's humiliated to the max, being the ruler of the world, of the ruler of the demons. So here's another story. Then, but there's Bali. There's the same Bali Maharaj who's actually, he's a, in a way, as I see it, has a good way of doing things. And that's the, and maybe you could say that's why he could defeat the demigods, because he did. He worshipped the Supreme Lord. He followed his guru, and he became powerful. The demigods had become weak. Let's see here. The demigods were weak. How could the demigods be weak? They were, you know, they're the demigods. the devotees, yes, but they had displeased the guru at one point, or Indra. And that's one of the stories. And by displeasing the Indra displeasing the guru, he loses power. They lose his power, and then the demigods say, "Ha! Now is the time to attack. The enemy is weak. Let's attack them." Successfully attacking and taking over the universe. That's quite interesting. Taking over the whole universe. That's also. Interesting thing that we are living in an interesting world. In a way that the modern science have one, or the modern science gives us one picture of the universe. It's kind of a dead and lifeless universe. It just happens by a chance. But our universe is actually a living universe with personalities and powers. Powerful personalities is ruling the whole thing, and we are not limited to just this planet Earth. There's life everywhere. There's powers everywhere, and there's the demigods. So we may then think, well, that's nice stories, but actually we're not speaking about stories. We're speaking about realities. That's the reality. But of course, we may not understand how it is the reality, but it's that's the universe as is described or depicted in the Bhagavatam, and also we can see in connection with the demons and the demigods. Of course, at modern time also some people are speculating about demons or something planted from other whatever dimension or something, creating a disturbance. And in one sense, you can say, well, that's correct. We have the Bhagavatam is saying there is such a kind of power struggle going on in the universe. what I take there is that the demons, Bali Maharaj is a good demon. He has some character and he keeps his word. And he knows how to manage things also. Of course, Duryodhan, he was on the enemy side. He became the enemy of his cousins, and he was not always so friendly with Krishna. But he was a good manager. That's interesting. Then it's not necessarily just by being a devotee we will be a good manager. But if a manager becomes a good devotee, that's good. Of course. So the demigods has got a plan, or the Lord is giving an outline for action in order to save the situation. And as we heard, the demigods approaches the demons to make a truce. And we heard about the truce Satchinanda Swami spoke about, making some kind of alliance, and then together accomplish something big. But here, maybe also for us devotees, sometimes the devotees in communications thinks, or not in communications, but in just thinking of making alliance with this or that. Of course, then we have this alliance, but then we can look at the alliance and think, what is the motivation? What is the intention? And here in the purport is indicated a little bit the thinking of the demons, Bali Maharaj and his friends. They thought, this proposal of churning the milk ocean and getting the nectar of immortality, yes, it's a very good idea. Of course. But they don't say, and you're weak. So when we get the nectar, then we just take it away from you and enjoy it ourselves. So that's the unspoken part of their agreement. And of course, demigods, in one sense, also have an idea, or the Lord has there an idea that they're going to, in this way, and can be successful and actually conquer the universe or to take back the control of the universe. It's a part of the plan. It's quite an interesting part, interesting plan, an interesting thing to do, to churn the milk ocean and having Vasuki and the Lord coming as a tortoise to give just a shelter for this heavy golden mountain that's going to churn the milk ocean. So there we can, we can speak about the intention. So if someone comes and gives you a proposal, then the maybe question can, here the demigod seems to have just quite, maybe I could say naively said, oh yes, sounds good, of course. They had their back thought, oh yes, we will, this weak demigods, we will play them out and take over. And the demigods had their way. Okay, so the intention, what is your intention? Then we can also say, in a devotional life, what is our intention? Okay, now we're reading here, The God conscious party is always happy and victorious. Maybe we sometimes want the happy part, but not the difficult part. We want the easy part of the story, and sometimes not willing to take the more difficult part of service and surrender in different ways to serve Guru and Krishna. So we can see here the demons agree based on their understanding that they will be, if there wasn't the thing that there was something to gain, they wouldn't be interested. So that we can say that's not pure. And now I thought in terms of devotional service. Okay, we engage in devotional service for the sake of pleasing the Lord, and maybe solving our problems. Krishna gives his analysis in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how four kind of pious men surrender to him. Because they're pious. We can say Bali Maharaj was a pious demon. But the pious, the turning to the Lord, but they have some interest. Krishna says, those who are suffering, turn to the Lord. Pious person in a suffering condition may turn to the Lord to get his problem solved. The one in need of money, we can't need money, let's turn to the Lord. Let's become a life member of ISKCON or I don't know, something. Maybe it will give me some business. Or something. And then the curious, so there we can say it's not a pure surrender. It's not unmotivated. It's motivated by a desire for gaining yourself. And then there is the curiosity. Of course, curiosity, knowing, want to know, and one engages in the devotional service, but then when maybe the curiosity is satisfied, then maybe the interest is not so big anymore. And then there is the one in knowledge, who actually knowledge, surrender to the Lord. Bhavanam janmanam ante gyanamam prabhajante vasudeva savamiti samatma sudulabha. After many lives, one who is actually acknowledged, surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare, Krishna says. And then he says about this four kind of man, that the one in knowledge who surrender unto him is as the highest of the best, when you surrender in knowledge. In the third canto of the Bhagavatam, there Kapilarya speaks to his mother and gives instructions on a devotional service. And he starts with describing devotional service in the three modes of material nature. Of course, understanding that devotional service is not under the modes of material nature, but the one who performs the devotional service may be still under the influence of the modes of material nature. So the one in the mode of ignorance may be. We also the other day described here something about Kanishtadikari, someone or the deity worship. Okay, that's the Kapiladev also speaking. He says, yes, that's Kapiladev. He says, a devotee, he says, it's quite heavy in a way, he says, if you worship the deity without knowing how to respect other living entities, your worship is like the pouring, what is it, of ghee on the ashes. You make a sacrificial yajna, and then there's no flames left, but still you pour water, and not the pour water. you pour ghee, thinking that you will get some benefit, but you will not get any benefit because the fire is out. The sacrifice is over. Lord Vishnu has already left. Because when you made, how was it yesterday? I think they were going to have some yajna test or something. But you make the yajna fire, whatever, kund. And then you invite the Lord in his various names for different purposes for the yajna, and the Lord becomes present. You have the fire, it's Lord Vishnu, it's his mouth, he's eating through the fire, that is his tongue. Okay, so then now the yajna is over, but still you pour ghee in, but Lord Vishnu is gone, or he is not eating anymore, his tongue is not there. So that is a waste of time. We can say, sacrifice made in ignorance. So in a similar way described, then Kapiladev says, if you worship the deities but don't know how to respect other living entities, and we can say then the Kanishtadikari, it's also just me and Krishna. Understanding that Krishna is in the temple and I'm worshipping and That's where a great but doesn't respect other living entities. They don't see the presence of the Lord in the heart of all living entities, not just in the temple, but everywhere. So the intention, there's description of the one in the passion who engaging it in devotional service. It's kind of interesting in getting recognition and appreciation. At least that can also have a sectarian outlook. More kind of okay, recognition, we can say, as a motivating power in the devotional service. And then it describes the one in the mode of goodness, we can say the brahmanas, and that is the engaging devotional service for the sake of the purification, for the rectification. And we can say, that sounds very good. Yes, it is good. It's in the mode of goodness. But it's then still not described as pure devotional service. Of course, that will bring you, when you're thus purified, and you get to the, hopefully, on the way there or there, we get to the pure platform. And then the description there was one point I remember is that when you're there, when you're actually then purified, when you actually then your love of Krishna is awakened, then you're naturally just spontaneously attracted to the devotional service and chanting and hearing. It's not a matter that I should go to the Bhagavatam. No, I want to go to the Bhagavatam. I want to chant my Ram. It's not awakened. Sometimes I think I should. But then, well, no, I want to. Because it's for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. Guru and Krishna, and here says also, the God-conscious party is always happy and victorious because they have a living interaction with the Lord. They actually love the Lord and want to serve the Lord and please the Lord. Yeah, that. So there, the Bhakti Rasamrita. We have this. Okay. Yes. So the interesting thing is for us is to develop first-class devotion, and then it's described. And you know that. Anya bilasita sunyam jnana kamadya navritam anukulyena Krishna nu shilanam bhaktir uttama. When first-class devotional service develops, one will be devoid of all material desires, knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy and fruitive action. The devotee will constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. So that is the intention, the attitude, to want to serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. Otherwise we maybe have, I want to serve Krishna as I desire. Of course Krishna is very smart. So we have also the demigods and the demons, and there's a structure up there. There's a structure up there, and there's a structure here also. And not everyone can manage, and maybe not everyone can preach, and not everyone can grow vegetables, not everyone can work with the computers. So we are a little bit different. And Krishna takes advantage of that. But the devotees are willing to try to serve Krishna as Krishna wants him to serve him. But why should Krishna want to his devotees to do something that's foreign to his nature? Of course, as we started this movement, at least as the movement started, we were trying to do whatever was necessary, even though we may not have been so qualified in all aspects. And then as things get more in place, there gets more power, and then more things can happen. So that one comes from Europe and the West and looks at India and the temples are coming up, projects are coming up. So it seems like there's some good structure and some things going on that allows for things to manifest. The structure in itself is not the essence, but it's a supports. And in that, the devotion can be taken and used and powering big things. Big things can happen and things are happening. Okay, so then... okay. Yes, be victorious. Because Prabhupada said the God conscious party is always happy and victorious. Because if we do it nicely, properly, we will be victorious. If we're a little bit spaced out and maybe premature in our devotion and trying to take a too big bite, we may not be victorious. But I thought there's another aspect of being victorious also. The God-conscious party is always happy and victorious. That the God-conscious party is always here at the Bhagavatam. It was always engaged in devotional service. We'll chant the holy name of the Lord. And thus, we will be victorious. We will defeat. We will not really defeat, but we will... let's see. Use my external memory. There's a final verse here. In the 10th canto, Bhagavatam prays to Lord Krishna. Yes. Kyane paya samudra pasha namanta eva divanti sambukaritam bhavadiya vartam stane stita srutigatam tanuvan manobir ye prayaso jita jito pyasitais trilokyam. Lord Brahma said, my dear Lord, those devotees who have thrown away the impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth and have therefore given up the process of speculative knowledge can remain situated in their established social positions, and with the body, mind and words they should offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating the life to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees. They will certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. So they conquer the Lord will be. You don't have to take sannyas to conquer the Lord. You don't have to stay where you are, but sit down and listen to the Bhagavatam or the narrations of the Lord. And in that way the Lord captures us as we get captured by the Lord. And of course the Lord is unconquerable. The Lord as death is also unconquerable. So by the engaging in devotional service, we conquer the Lord, who is also Mithya Sarva Rasaham. I am death. I am come to take everyone away. He will so say, death will be conquered. We will not die. So we can say that way. We are victorious. We will just enter. We will enter the spiritual world with Krishna and play and dance and whatever. And of course we have our idea how the spiritual world should be. I have a suspicion that it's much, much better than we can imagine. It's like, in any case, there is that we will be, the Lord will be conquered, we will be conquered, we will be victorious. We victoriously enter into the spiritual world at the time of death, chanting the holy name or hearing the holy name. And if there is no one chanting the holy name, in our heart remembering the Lord, and that way enter, following the Lord or entering the spiritual world or his domain. Okay, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. I don't know if there's some question or comment, is there? Yes, Mara.
Mentioned earlier about Bali Maharaj and how actually his devotion, he gave everything to Krishna, was so devotional and surrendered that he even saw through his his materialistic spiritual master went against him.
Yeah.
The man of integrity, Bali Maharaj. And yet, how did Krishna treat him? You know, you said embarrassed him. Where's my other, you know, third step? Locked him up. So, you know, I'm trying to surrender to Krishna. I'm doing my best to serve him. And so many difficulties come. And you know, who is this Krishna? Why should I surrender to him? It's not an easy thing. What's going on here? I'm devotional. I'm trying to surrender to Krishna. And he's treating me so roughly. Who is your Krishna? I'm not surrendering to him. Just doing my job.
Yeah, sometimes one may wonder, well, who is it? Who is this? Or something happened. I had a car accident once, and one devotee almost could have got killed. It. Thanks, Krishna, I didn't get killed. But and I just, Krishna, why? It was like, why did this happen? And then in my mind, I kind of thought, well, when I die, maybe not so qualified, maybe I have a chance to see Paramatma or something, and then I will ask, why did that happen? Why we can see then, even if we are devotees, I had a car accident, could have, well, thanks Krishna, the devotee was not killed and is still active as devotee. So, well, who is he? Well, he is... We can't capture him. That's for sure. He is adhita. He's unconquerable, and we can't capture him. He's like Mother Yasoda trying to capture Krishna with, when Krishna allowed himself to be captured, then he was captured. But of course, then that became a loving exchange. And now, so we're trying to serve Krishna, and there's so many difficulties. Krishna doesn't forget it.
Krishna
does not forget it. The sacrifice and difficulties we've been willing to endure to serve Krishna. We may forget, we may not see the whole scheme, but as far as I'm concerned, Krishna doesn't forget it. He may not seem appreciative now, but in the long term, he knows well what, it's a little bit like in the Sri Upanishad, at the end, the devotee says that, you know, now you please remember all sacrifice and austerities I've done for you. And that gives me some solace sometimes and think, well, you can pray to Krishna, you please remember what I've done. But by that, I will remember the Lord, by that trend of thinking. But our Krishna is not an easy thing to understand, always how he's doing. But I say it's a test. And then the Pandavas, you know, how they were such a great devotees, and they had to go through so much difficulties. So they seem to be like a reoccurring theme of Krishna in his way of dealing with the devotees and putting them in tests. And in that way, as they pass the tests, they become more glorious. And actually Krishna uses as a way, maybe as a means to glorify the devotees and approve. So that they're, in any case, without tests, what can we boast about? Oh, I am such a great devotee, we think. Well, the proof is when we are tested. So that's, I take it, one way Krishna testing us. But he does not forget what we try to do. Okay, Hare Krishna. Okay, so, yes.
Thank you for your class. You mentioned also in the beginning that this is also in regards to Maharaj's Krishna, but when ISKCON first began, all of us were so immature and had no qualifications to even perform devotional service. In order for Srila Prabhupada to create ISKCON and expand Lord Chaitanya's mission, he had to rely on us unqualified devotees, and many times gave us tasks that seemed almost impossible to perform, but because we had that desire to satisfy Sri Prabhupada, we made efforts under extreme conditions, and somehow or other, Krishna says also in Bhagavad Gita, as you surrender to me, I give you the intelligence. So in these unqualified conditions, we became successful, and it's gone. No, I'm not asking a question. I'm giving a...
Oh, I thought he answered the question.
I was responding to your question.
Okay. Okay. Yes, thank you. Well, that is true. I'm speaking maybe for myself. When I came, when there was a good management in the temple, actually things went quite nice. At one point there, Prabhupada, when Prabhupada took advantage of whoever was there, that's Prabhupada's intelligence to take these different kind of characters, but he saw what they can do and somehow empowered them or directed them to do things, and then they started, and in the process of doing, they also learned. Now, my personal experience, I came in 1970 in Germany, and Prabhupada went to India to preach as a kind of another strategy to deal with things in the movement. And he took his best men from all over the world. Okay. He took his best men from around the world to accompany him in India. But it had an effect on the places where these competent persons came from, like in Germany, my experience. And I heard a similar thing happen in Australia, that the devotees were... It was a tough time to work on without, okay, good management, if you say like that. And again, so I have that experience of... the challenge is there. That's maybe okay, but then 1 year later, in Germany, the devotee came back, the manager, and then just with that touch of that devotee, then things started to get in place and started to move on in a nice way, in a more nice way. Okay, Hare Krishna. Well, so it's... Well, we're sitting here, Prabhupada, behind us. He's sitting where he was sitting. And, here we... The temple is here, and, you know, the devotional service goes on, there's lectures, and the preaching is spreading, expanding around the world. That's a very wonderful thing. Hare Krishna. Okay, there. Okay.
You were speaking about Bali Maharaj. So, Bali Maharaj surrendered to Krishna and whatever he wanted. Bali Maharaj surrendered to Krishna. It's a first time that came on my head. So, there's some pious activities of Bali Maharaj was there. He was the grandson of Bali Maharaj.
Yeah. Yes, he was the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. But it's interesting, the dynasties, you have the demons dynasty and the demigods dynasties, and some are more pious, some less. But even in the impious dynasty, they can pious characters or devotees or personalities can take birth. Hare Krishna. Okay, now there's we are a lady has to one of them. Well, there is in the Bhagavatam at one point there's a giving a description of the Indras, and it's also mentioned that Bali Maharaj later on appropriately will be put in the position of Indra, of the Indra of the universe. So he will, but it just now at this point it was not his time. We can say maybe that's his fault. He's trying to overrule the gods, Krishna's way of management and interfering in it. And that was not appreciated. But later on he will be put in that. So his character and capacity will be honored in the future. That's how it is going. Okay. Hare Krishna. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.